Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. Inspiring stories that change lives. Where ordinary heroes tell their extraordinary stories of how they have triumphed over unexpected challenges. This is where we say what can't be said and use the AAA formula for freedom. Awareness, acceptance, and action. Now, here's your host, Hillary Burns.
Well, hello and welcome and happy new year, everybody. And just hearing that introduction, I always say I'm not going to cry, but just hearing the introduction gets me going because this has been a dream come true of mine to have a show where I get to interview people such as Rabbi Jill. Now, Rabbi Jill was introduced. See, I'm crying. So whatever. It happens. Rabbi Jill was introduced to me by my friend Helene Witt, who is an amazing person. And this is what she said about Rabbi Jill. Rabbi Jill is the most loving, giving, talented, beautiful person alive.
Oh my God.
So what do you think about that? That's a pretty cool introduction, right? Want me to read it again? Let's read it again just to really get you going. So Rabbi Jill is the most loving, giving, talented, beautiful person alive. Quote Helene Witt. So welcome, Rabbi Jill. It's a pleasure to have you here.
I'm embarrassed to even be here after that introduction. No, it can't be true. Who are they talking to? Who's Helene talking about? Not me.
Right, right.
Not I, certainly.
Right. That's great. It's really great. So yes. So anyway, we, you know, we're here, we're going to have a chat. It's actually the first time we're meeting. And my question to you would be, why a rabbi? Like, what had you as a little girl, want to become a rabbi?
Well, I didn't want to become a rabbi.
Okay, let's rephrase it. How did you end up being a rabbi? How's that?
As a little girl, I wanted to be a performer. And that's kind of how I ended up, because rabbis are performers. But I wanted to sing. I wanted to dance. I learned how to do that. I started out, I came from a family that really valued learning. Mm-hmm. And I was interested in the environment. So first I became an environmental biologist. And
like in college or as a little girl?
In college.
Okay. As a growing up person, you were a singer and a dancer, and then you went to college to be an environmental biologist. Okay. I'm just trying to get the flow. I like to track people. So, okay.
Yes.
Where did you go?
I learned how to dance. I learned how to sing, and I was still learning in college. I went to Smith College.
Okay.
And after college, I moved to New York City and got a few different environmental jobs. And I was learning. I was a student of singing privately.
Okay. What kind of songs?
Classical music.
Classical. Okay. Wow.
Opera, art song. And as I was sitting in the lab looking at phytoplankton under the microscope, I was thinking, you know, I don't want to die with all my music inside me.
Wow.
I've got to try this. I've got to try to fulfill my dreams. And I think I'll have a lot more fun singing than I would staying in this lab. So
And how old were you at this point?
I was in my early 20s.
Okay. So you hadn't been in the lab for too long yet.
No. And I was also, I got a job in a consulting firm, an environmental consulting firm, after being in the lab.
Okay.
And I still thought I'd have more fun performing. And I was right.
Now, Helene had said you had done EST. Is that true? And when does that... I don't know if other people are familiar with it, but I am. So I just want to know, like, where in the in this timeline did that happen, and did that affect your decision, or had you not done it yet?
After I quit my job to study singing and acting, I realized that I needed some support in the choice of career.
Okay.
So the S training was something that I did to remove some roadblocks to being a performer. And it was a wonderful experience. I learned a lot from it. There were people who became Est groupies. And I've never been a joiner in that sense.
Okay.
So
you just did the one program.
Well, I did a couple of the seminars and I thought, you know, this is not for me anymore.
Okay.
I've derived everything that I can from it. And it's time for me to pursue other avenues.
So did that help you make, because going from environmental to singing and acting is a pretty big jump. So would you say that, well, had you made it yet, or were you still consulting by day and singing at night?
No, I had quit my job.
You did. Okay, right. You said that.
And I needed to earn some money. So, yes. So I have a friend who was doing cantorial soloist work.
Oh.
I said to him, I would like to get into this. How do you do it? And he said, well, I have music from my friend, Howard Bender, who was a compromario at the Met, and he also went to Hebrew Union College in the cantorial department. And since then, I've met Howard a number of times.
Oh.
And he said, I'll lend you Howard's music, learn it, and get yourself a job. So that was my introduction to cantorial work. And through a fluke, I called Hebrew Union College because they had a placement service for cantorial soloists at that time. They don't have it anymore.
Wow.
But in the early 80s or the late 70s, I'm not exactly even sure when this is, but it was around the time I took S probably. I called them and they had given all their well-paying jobs to their students, but they had one job left, which was their own community service at West 4th Street in the Village, doing the holy days.
Wow.
So they said to me, have you done this before? Oh, yes, of course I've done it before. And as a high school student, I used to sing in a very large synagogue in Washington, D.C. with the paid professional choir.
Oh.
I wasn't paid. I wasn't professional, but I did know a lot about the service because I used to go Friday nights and sing. So I didn't know nothing, but I really didn't know the Holy Days liturgy. And here,
so growing up, you didn't go to temple, or you did, or did you know Hebrew already?
Really did not have the kind of education that I would need later on.
Okay. Wow. So that was brave.
my family went on the holy days. You know, we had a Passover Seder.
Yeah.
But other than that, we didn't go every Friday night, except I went to sing.
Right. So did you learn Hebrew? I mean, Or not yet?
Not yet.
Wow. So you would read it hyphenetically or something?
Yes, phonetically.
Phonetically.
I could follow a little bit, but I didn't really know it.
Okay.
So I got this job, trial by fire, with officiating with people who taught cantors, you know, being a complete ignoramus.
And you were the soloist.
I was the cantor for
Wow.
Days
Wow.
at Hebrew Union College.
How did it go? Was it fine?
I got through it, let's put it that way.
Wow.
And then I did the Holy Days in all different places for about 10 years. So that I really got to know the Holy Day liturgy and be competent with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I was looking for another Holy Days job. These jobs tend to be just for 1 year. And I got a job in Borough Park, Brooklyn, at a little Reform synagogue. And they needed somebody for the entire year, not just for the Holy Days. And I had never gone through an entire year of holidays and Shabbat services. And I learned. The rabbi there, Rabbi Charles Schulzen, was very helpful to me. And at first he couldn't stand me. And he knew how little I knew. So he used to say to me, remember, Hebrew is read from right to left. So I started to tease him back. And I would say, remember, I'm ignorant, but I'm not stupid.
Now, was this your full-time job at this point, or did you have another one?
Well, it was a full-time, part-time job because okay. I had two children.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. All right. So, okay.
I had gotten married early in my 20s.
Okay.
And I waited for a while, and then we had children. So it was a part-time job.
Right. Okay.
But I was home with the kids. I was a full-time mom.
Perfect. So just on Fridays you had to go, right?
And one Saturday morning a month.
Wow.
In the midst of a sea of Hasidim, this little Reform synagogue in Borough Park, Brooklyn.
What do you mean? They didn't come to your service. They were just around. Okay.
The whole neighborhood practically was Hasidic.
Oh, so how many people came to the Reform?
Well, at first we had a nice congregation, but over the years it dwindled to about 20 people.
Wow.
And then they merged with another synagogue, and I was there for 2 years. I decided that I needed some kind of degree. I had started doing weddings. My congregation vouched for me that I was legit. So I got to sign up with New York City with the appropriate documentation from my synagogue. And I started doing rabbinic work there at my synagogue, because Rabbi Schulzen passed away.
Mm.
And students from the rabbinical schools would come. They had the book learning. I had the pulpit experience. So we would learn from each other. And I wanted to do a few more weddings. I wanted to earn a little more money.
Mm.
So I decided to get a degree. But I didn't know what kind of degree I should get. So I interviewed with a couple of the schools in their cantorial department. I interviewed with a couple of the schools again in their rabbinic department. And they all said, yes, we'll take you. But. If we accept you into our program, you have to stop doing these interfaith marriages. I was a very, very early proponent of interfaith marriage, like around 20 years ago, 22 years ago. And I said, this is not for me. I'm not going to be told who I can marry and what I should believe. So I came home to my husband and I said, can you imagine that? They told me not only would I have to stop doing interfaith marriages, but if my spouse is not Jewish, they will not ordain me. I said, that's unconstitutional.
And is your spouse Jewish?
He, at that time, was not Jewish. And we had been married a very long time.
Right. So then now they're not going to ordain. That's ridiculous. Okay. I'll shut up. Keep going.
No. That's great. Please jump in.
Well, we had to get, when I got married, I'm not married anymore, but when I got married, we called him a rent-a-rab, because my sister actually brought him in from Pennsylvania, because my rabbi wouldn't marry us. So we had someone that I didn't know, you know?
Well, when we got married, we were married by a Reform rabbi.
Yeah, and I was Reform, but he still wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, this one was very forward thinking.
Yeah.
So, years later.
So what happened? So you didn't do it?
So my husband, bless his heart, he said to me, if you want to do this, I will convert for you. So I said to him, well, I would never ask you to convert for me. If mm-hmm. I want to do this, I will find a way whether you convert or not. Mm-hmm. And I said, if conversion is something you want to do, I'll find the right person for you. So he said, I've been married to you so many years, I already feel like I'm Jewish.
Nice.
So I said, okay, if this is something you want for yourself, I'll find somebody. So I had started going around to a few rabbis here in New York City to discuss a change of career in midlife. And kind of surreptitiously, I was feeling them out to see if they would be the right person to convert to.
Now, the change of career is from cantor to rabbi. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, yes. I think it was from being a very part-time. I never had a cantorial degree.
Mm.
So it was kind of from being nothing to being something, even though I had been doing it for many years. So.
Now, what about the interfaith part?
Well, I heard.
Are you getting there?
Yeah, I am. I really
am. I'm like, what about that part? Okay, go ahead.
I heard that there was a rabbi who lived right across the street from me. And I thought, well, that's convenient. Why don't I go talk to him? So it was Rabbi Joseph Gelberman. I went across the street. He was very nice to me. I spoke to him. And I came home and I said, this is the rabbi who's going to convert you. And Rabbi Gelberman changed my life in the most amazing way.
Your life, not changed, just your husband's, but yours.
Changed my life.
How?
He was a holy person, completely down to earth, very funny. He was originally a Hasid from Hungary. And he came here during the Second World War at the very beginning. He left his first wife and only child in Hungary and worked to earn money to bring them here. And by the time he had saved up enough money to bring them here, they were already gone. They were killed in Auschwitz. And he entered he entered about 6 months of terrible hatred, anger, depression. And then he realized that his own hatred, his own anger were making him sick. And he gave it up to be the most loving, forgiving human being I have ever met.
Wow.
And became one of the earliest proponents of the interfaith movement. He was doing interfaith work in the early 1950s, and maybe even before.
Wow.
So when he was teaching my husband, he would say to me, you come too. And I said, well, I'm really kind of busy with the kids and I have other things going on. He said, well, come when you can.
Mm.
And he started to work on me. He started to say, you ought to come to my seminary. Now, after my experience with some of the other seminaries in town, I was very careful about who I would listen to.
Mm.
Because I didn't want to be brainwashed. I knew what I believed. And after a while, I just knew that my heart, my soul, my mind were going to be safe with him. And I started working toward becoming...
Can I just...
Yeah.
Safe from what?
I'm sorry?
You said you knew you were going to be saved with him. Saved. Yeah, saved from what?
Like not
what?
Saved, but safe. Safe with
oh,
him.
Safe. I'm like, okay, what were you? Okay,
no,
okay,
safe. I didn't need salvation.
Right. Okay, good.
I just didn't want to be brainwashed in a way that, you know, we in this movement of Judaism, we believe this, and this movement believe that. And I am much more a free thinker, even now.
Yeah.
I tend to be a very free thinker. And I look at a text and I see how it speaks to me in this time, in this place, not what somebody said 2,000 years ago. Sometimes what somebody said 2,000 years ago is beautiful. Mm. And then I keep it. I treasure it as part of the tradition. And if it doesn't work for me as a modern woman or a person in the 21st century, I say that plainly. I find ways to build bridges between people, no matter what their religion, what their culture. I think that since we're all one, it's very important to find the treasures in other religions and let those treasures enrich my religion.
Mm. No, okay.
We digress.
No. I love where you're going. I just want to say, when you said, okay, so here, yeah, we're not digressing. I'm just going back for a second. Joseph Gelberman, right?
Gelberman.
Gelberman, okay. So here he was, hateful, blah, blah, blah. He decides, you know, his hatred is making him sick. Do you know how he had that epiphany? Like, how he altered himself? And then, did you always, obviously, whatever he became resonated with you, were you always that, I mean, I guess if you have it inside you and someone pulls it out, it just brings it more to the forefront. I'm sure you didn't change. So those are my questions. If you don't mind, I'm just curious.
I love questions. Questions are
okay,
the
good.
Best.
Okay, good.
I only knew him the last 7 years of his life. He was 98 when he died.
Wow.
He was quite elderly. He was born in 1912. And I know that he came from a very, very loving family of Hasidic tradition, that you can find God through opening your heart, through singing, through dancing, through study. You don't have to be a Torah scholar or a Talmud scholar in early Hasidim in the 18th and 19th centuries. It was originally an anti-scholastic movement that became more and more concerned with learning.
Okay. Because just so you know, my grandmother was from Hungary.
Ah.
And yeah, so anyway, she came here with her sisters. There was a whole bunch of sisters and there was not enough money for the dowry. So they came here to America. I think their father was one of those scholars, so he wasn't really making money. So when they came here and then the rest, some of them escaped anyway, it's a long story, but most of them did perish in the Holocaust. So I'm just wondering, how did this guy who, you know, but what you're saying, tell me if I'm wrong, he was raised with love.
Was.
Love was around. It wasn't, you know, you didn't have to spend all your time in it. It wasn't conditional. Like, you know, I don't know why I'm saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. When I was working in New York and I was working with some Hasidic Jews, this guy was like, "You're not Jewish. You know," and I was just like, "Whoa, what? Where are you coming? Like, that's not love. That's not inclusive. That's not belonging." He was nasty, you know. And I did have other experiences where I didn't have a ticket to go to High Holy Days. They kicked me out, but they didn't kick me out. But they made me feel not included, not, you know. And I was like, "Whoo!" So I love what you're saying. I just, you know, that's what there was for me to say. to get back to present. Yeah. So I think it's amazing, right?
You have horrible experiences in any religion.
Yeah.
And Judaism is certainly one of those. And you can have wonderful experiences.
Right.
When someone treats you that way, I call it religion shooting itself in the foot.
Yeah.
They want people to come, but there are some synagogues, some movements that don't know how to treat people once they come.
Yeah.
And God doesn't exclude anyone. God doesn't leave anyone out. Who are we to be gatekeepers? I want to be door openers.
Right, right.
I want to be a door opener. I want to say, come in. These are the welcoming arms of Judaism.
Yeah.
All the best, not the worst.
And would you say you were that before you met with him and he just brought it out for you?
It's really hard to look at one's own growth and see how the stages of learning happen. I'm sure it was always there. I'm sure that it was brought out. And I'm sure that I also learned things that were not inside me. I think both. He was such a marvelous teacher, not by what he taught, but who he was. There are people who just teach by example, not by words.
Yeah, being who they're being.
Who they are.
Mm.
So loving and showing me that there was another level to every human person, me included. I could find that within myself.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah, in such a beautiful way.
Oh, well, all right. So we're going to take a very short break to hear from our sponsor, Kikori, and then we'll come back and we'll learn more about what you're up to now. How does that sound?
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Are you inspired? Are you living a life story you are proud to tell? Are you actively pursuing and creating the life of your dreams? If not, you really need Hillary's AAA program for freedom. Just visit gettingrealwithhillary.com and schedule time with Hillary today.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
All right. That's my daughter's company. That was her voice.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, Kikori, they do social emotional learning activities for children, and they bring them into schools. They also bring them into corporate team building. So it's a very, very cool company. So anyway, they're the sponsor. So back to you, Jill. So, okay. So you got this, I love, you know, the all inclusiveness, that's what I say, that we're one world community. We're all part of each other, and you welcome everyone. And that's amazing. So just tell us, so you got there, and then tell us what happened, and then tell us where you're going with what you told me before. I won't give it away yet.
Well, I got the rabbinic degree, and my synagogue in Borough Park appointed me as assistant rabbi, and I was there as assistant rabbi for 2 years. And then because they had merged with another synagogue, I felt like that cartoon of the walls coming in. Like, I didn't have the opportunities that I really wanted. And I was looking for a place to have a few bar and bat mitzvahs. And I called the Actors Temple, where I had never been, because it was in Manhattan and my students were in Manhattan. And I said,
they didn't do them at your temple?
Well, they had allowed me to do that, but there was a new regime and they really didn't want people coming in. So I just contacted a few synagogues in Manhattan. And I asked if I could bring in a bat mitzvah student for her ceremony. And they said, by the way, we have no rabbi. And I said, okay.
For how long? Like ever or just recently? Yeah.
So I went to a service. I went to a Friday evening service. And then I went to a Saturday morning service.
Well, who led them? Who led them?
At the Friday evening service, there were students from the rabbinical schools leading.
Oh, okay.
And there were like 8 people there on a Friday and 6 people there on a Saturday.
Wow.
And the rabbi had died a few months before. Very young rabbi of a terrible cancer.
Wow.
And I took a look around at the synagogue and I heard about the rabbi dying of cancer. And I thought, I don't know about this place. Maybe I ought to just back away from this. So I was giving a little dinner party and I went to Whole Foods at 59th Street. And I happened to, in a very mysterious way, run into one of the few people I had met at Actors Temple, and she was an employee at the time. And it just felt like God tapping me on the shoulder and saying, I need somebody to build up my synagogue, you.
Wow.
So I thought, okay, maybe I ought to go.
And God's telling me I better do it.
Another look. And one of the rabbinic students at from Hebrew Union College, who I had officiated with at Borough Park, he and I were having lunch one day, and he said, you know, with a rabbinical degree from where you're going, you'll never have a congregation. So I said, I know, I'm just doing it to get a few more weddings.
Wait, did you have the degree at that point?
I was just getting it. No,
I didn't. You were still getting it. Okay.
And he said, you'll never have a congregation.
Wow.
And I had the longest audition at Actors Temple that any rabbi ever had. I started doing part-time services there in January of 2006, and they finally hired me. They told me they would hire me in May. They hired me the end of June. So I had almost 6 months of officiating there on a part-time basis. And this coming June, it'll be 17 years that I've been there.
Wow. So do you have more than 8 and 6 people?
Well, before the pandemic, we did. Now we have a hybrid service. We have a few people on Saturday morning, but we have usually around 20 or more on Friday night.
Wow.
Which for a little synagogue is not bad.
No.
Because It's not the same 20, you know. Say, of those 20, there are 30 more who come occasionally. There's a pool of about 50.
Right. And wow. So, nice. So do you love it?
I love it. I love it. I'm the cantor. I'm the rabbi. I get to sing. I get to speak. I get to learn. I get to write. I counsel people. I wear a lot of hats. I still do weddings, and I teach bar and bat mitzvah. I teach conversion.
And how many in the congregation? Are there more people, or is it not like that?
Well,
like, who comes to learn? Where do you get the kids and stuff?
It could be we have between 150 and 200 congregants.
Okay.
Parents are not necessarily members or congregants when they find me to teach their children.
Okay.
So that teaching is a little bit outside. We used to have a Hebrew school. We don't anymore. Mm-hmm. It's mostly a congregation of singles and empty nesters from middle through late middle age.
Hmm.
We have a few young families.
Yeah. Sounds fun. Maybe I should come in.
You should come.
I'll drag Helene and we'll come.
Come with Helene.
Yes. So, okay. So tell me, I know when we talked originally, you were talking about a project. Now, you might have other projects, but the one that I remember is a gender neutral Bible, right? Bible or Torah? Torah.
No.
So tell me about that.
Same. It's the five books.
Okay.
And I need to make more progress on it than I'm making. But.
And what's your. Like, why? Why? So are you want to take out hers and his and like anything gender? Is that what you mean?
Well, I've been studying Torah for at least 20 years.
Okay.
And I would like to write a Torah commentary. And I have a lot of notes for my Torah commentary. It's a very contemporary look at the text. And I realized that in writing the commentary, I really had to do my own translation. Because if I use someone else's translation, it's not going to work.
Mm.
So the first thing I did was take out all of the he in reference to God. So if there's a male person like Abraham or a female person like Sarah, they are still he and she.
Okay.
But in terms of God language, God is not male and female. God has no body. So, and the word for God in the Hebrew, consisting of the four letters Yud, He, Vav, He, is a conjugation of the verb to be. So God's name is being.
Wow.
It contains all the letters for I was, I am, I will be. So God's true name in the Torah, in the Hebrew, is being or existence in the past, present, and future. So that's the first thing I did. And then I went.
So how would you refer to God then? As being?
Being.
Being. Mm-hmm. Wow.
No.
That's really cool. Okay. Keep going.
There are two different words for God in the Torah, main words. There are many, many different words for God in the Torah. But the main ones are being. And the other word is Elohim, which really means gods. It's plural, which kind of means the plurality of all existence. But I just use the word God for that with a footnote the first time that I use it. You know, an explanation in the commentary.
So Adonai is the being, the Yud, whatever you said.
Yud Hevav, yes.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and Adonai means my master. So I can't use that, right? Because that's gendered. So I tried
Translating is not, yeah, subjective, right?
Well, it is, all translation someone said is a lie.
Right,
because
because
you can't translate from one language to another and not make subjective judgments.
Right.
That's why there are so many different translations.
Right. Wow.
Making some progress.
And then what do you, not that you need to accomplish anything, you might just want to do it, but is there a purpose? Like, is there something you want to give to the world or create or like what in the comment? I mean, I'm sure it will be a gift. I'm not saying it's not, but in your heart, like, what is your wish or your vision?
Well, I have to kind of make another digression.
Okay.
Because being a former scientist, I'm really interested. Oh, dear. I'm sorry, everyone. Really interested in the correspondence between science and contemporary spirituality, between quantum physics and contemporary conceptions of the divine. And when I look at the Torah in the Hebrew, I can see so much wisdom that is being corroborated in contemporary science concerning spirituality. So my commentary on the Torah incorporates contemporary spirituality in a way that is fresher and less judgmental, I think, than many previous commentaries.
Wow.
Brings the Torah really into our time. And I think one example is my published piece in the Jewish Week, and also it's on the internet, my interpretation of the Garden of Eden. The Garden of Eden is not about original sin, not according to the plain meaning of the text. The Garden of Eden is about Eve's gift to the world of full human consciousness and taking responsibility for our choices and finding the good, finding the upside in every decision we make.
Wow.
The downside is clearly stated, and it's up to us to find the blessing, to find the beauty in full human consciousness, not to think that God didn't want us to be conscious. God has enough monkeys and alligators and grass and birds, but only we have full consciousness. And God clearly wanted us to have it. And Eve was brave. Eve was smart. She wanted to be smarter. She wanted these gifts for herself and her husband and all humanity. And that's what the text supports. It does not support that God was angry at the people. It supports that once they chose full human consciousness, and the serpent represents intuition. The serpent spoke to Eve. And the serpent teaches us, follow your intuition. Don't discount it. And there'll be amazing gifts that come to you through following your intuition. It's just the most beautiful story. And it's not at all about sin. So.
Talk about changing the world. I mean, oh my God.
Yeah. It's very important.
That's like the biggest thing ever, because everyone thinks, good and evil, like bad and wrong.
Yeah.
And God's mad, right?
And women are bad, right?
Right.
But she's the heroine. She's the hero of the story.
Oh my God, we got to get that out. How can we get that out?
Well, I mean, it's been published. Jewish Week published it in 2012, I think. And it's on the internet. I have a video of it, but I want all
time
of
to bring it back. Yeah.
I want all of it to be there and to be able to say, look at these books. They have so much wisdom. We just have to, you know, take the cover off and look underneath and see what's being said to us in our time. Yeah, so I have to light a fire under myself and do a little more.
Well, how can I support you? I'm all about this. No, really, this is because
you're supporting me here.
Oh, yay. Well,
thank you.
Yeah, so you can spread this around. But, you know, like, until really a year or so ago, I was not aware of the divine and the consciousness. I just wasn't. And then I started studying with Sophie McLean, actually, who did this thing, disentangling the ego. So I just signed up. I didn't know what I was signing up for. And then that's where I got connected with that. And that our birthright is joy and happiness and not this other stuff, you know, bad and wrong. And so, like, hearing you say this is blowing my mind. And I had a reading, you know, because then I was all of a sudden like, whoo, this is cool. Like, this is really great. I never knew about this stuff before. And then they were said, oh, well, my job, you know, I don't know, who knows, is to raise the consciousness of the planet. I'm like, all right. Okay, that sounds fun. You know, I mean, not like first I was like, why me? But it's like, no, all of our jobs. And that's what you're saying is like, wow, taking the Bible and bringing that out is unbelievable.
And there's only one day in Judaism where God wants us to be miserable. But God gives us the commandment to rejoice many times.
Wow.
God wants us to be happy.
So why would you say that, or maybe I just missed it because I probably don't pay attention, but is that message other places? Or do you think are you the only one looking at it this way that you know of, or are other people as well?
I'm sure I'm not, because the evolution of human consciousness is happening within us.
Okay.
It's not... There's not one person out leading everybody toward it.
Everybody's kind of...
Religion, by its nature, is conservative. It wants to pull us back. Come back into the tradition.
Right.
But people are way out there because we've all evolved our consciousness just by when we were born and what we know coming into life. So in order for me to be where people are, I have to be out there where everyone is, spiritually speaking. And to be able to show people that religion is not necessarily what their parents, their grandparents believed, it can be what we see in it. It can resonate with what's in our hearts and our souls now. It can be a source of nourishment, not a to-do list. You must not do this and you should do that. Not that at all. It should be kind of, you know, like if you went on a trampoline, you would have that bounce to support you. That's what religion should be. It should be a source of support and learning and spiritual awareness. It should help us to extend ourselves and to find ourselves within the religion, not to have something imposed on us that feels too tight.
Yeah, and people, like, this is just my take. Like, religion is religion. Mm-hmm. And then spirituality is that other thing. I haven't seen, I mean, if I go to temple on the high holy days, there's some of that, but I haven't combined them because, but now what you're saying is they could be the same thing.
Ideally.
Yeah. Yeah. Ideally. That's amazing.
If you are the open, welcoming arms of religion, and you make a place for people to grow spiritually and intellectually, then that's a wonderful thing. And people are hungry for that. You know, people in our society want to know, well, where should I go? I have this compulsion to grow. Where can I go? And there are many places. There are many, many spiritual teachers.
Yeah.
You can find them on YouTube.
Right.
Many of them are wonderful. For me, Judaism is a source of great wisdom.
Mm.
And when I find a correspondence, I can say, oh, it's in the Torah.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. That's so beautiful. I'm so happy. I'm so happy to hear this. It's wonderful. And I would send them to your temple.
Oh,
I would send them. So, all right. So why don't we go through that? Because we only have 2 minutes. Why don't you give us how they would find you and your temple, and if they can do it on Zoom or if they go there, to hear more about it. And we can put links also, you know, in the notes as well. So how would they find more of you?
I am at the Actors Temple, which is theactorstemple.org.
Okay.
And I do services on Friday nights at 6:30 and Saturday mornings at 10:30. The Friday nights are in person and Zoom.
Okay.
Saturdays are only Zoom. All of my services are hybrid or Zoom. And I do a Torah study Wednesday nights at 7:30. All the information is on our website. In the weekly announcements, all the links are there.
Okay.
And the Actors Temple is at 339 West 47th Street in Manhattan, between 8th and 9th Avenues.
Wow. That's great. And is there anything else you would like to say to the audience in closing?
Oh, so much. Be able to be open-hearted and open-minded and embracing of all life and others, to be so grateful for this earthly, physical, human experience. That is something that we can find in many different spiritual traditions, both inside and outside religion. And the compulsion, the urge to be happy is the best one that there is. To be of help and of service to others, to love other people, to love ourselves. And we're here for a very positive reason. And I want to help people to achieve that. And for me, Judaism is the support and the source of much of my understanding.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much for what you're doing and who you are and what you're teaching.
Thank you.
It's inspiring. Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I'm so glad Helene referred, you know, introduced us. And thank you. Can't wait to hear more about what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you, and bless you, you and everyone who's listening.
Thank you.
Love to all of you.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary show. We hope you are entertained and inspired. Please subscribe to Hillary's newsletter. Go to gettingrealwithhillary.com for more freedom techniques and fantastic stories and links to other great stuff. And don't forget to tune in every week on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio TV. And let's get real. Let's get connected. Let's get inspired and create that life you love.